Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here, as always, with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, Ross Ferguson. How are you, brother?
I'm really good.
Yeah?
I've finished a whole can of Coke Zero. There's actually a tiny bit left.
So this episode is going to be fully caffeinated.
This is fully caffeinated.
The ones we just recorded are like partially caffeinated.
So does caffeine impact you as an individual? Like, does it wake you up?
No.
No, because it doesn't do anything
for
me.
I'm very immune to caffeine. Yep. Yeah. I'd have to have a whole lot. I do notice, because I'm off like caffeinated coffee. I don't drink caffeinated coffee. I drink decaf. But I do like a Coke Zero every evening maybe. And not too long ago, I had a caffeinated latte.
Okay.
And I did notice the difference.
Yeah.
The espresso, I wasn't, you know, buzzing or anything, like I was like a little shaky. I could tell like, fully leaded here.
Miriam just has to sniff caffeine after 12 p.m. and then she's up for the rest of like 24 hours.
Wow.
Like it really impacts her. So I am somebody that stays up later just generally.
Yeah.
I can be awake later. I don't really like mornings. I much prefer evenings. And so when Miriam's had like a coffee at 2 p.m. thinking, oh, finally, we get an evening, we can watch a movie together, we can chat, you know, we can maybe even have a late night supper together. And I'm just thinking, she has had some caffeine. And those days, I'm just like, I'm prepared. I've got the movies. I know which movie we're going to watch.
Maybe you should start bringing a cup of coffee home.
Well, so here's the issue is she refuses to drink it. So you kind of, you know, I always joke with her, I might just get you caffeinated coffee, and that would not be good for our marriage.
No,
if I just
if
like
drugging her caffeine.
Caffeine. But yeah, caffeine has never really.
I caffed your drink while you weren't looking.
Yeah. Not advisable. Just to make it very clear.
Hey, last week I was in.
Where were you last week?
I was in Houston at the time of this recording. I was in Houston last week, but I was not supposed to be. Mm. Well, so I went to Houston. 2 or 3 days I was going to spend with my parents, and then I was going to go to this youth camp, speak at this youth camp, and it got canceled because of this stupid hurricane.
Yeah.
Hurricane Beryl, Beryl. It was really funny because then you watch some of the news, you know, down there, and you have the Texan accents, and they would say Beryl.
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 So it was like one syllable instead of two. It wasn't Beryl. It was Beryl. Hurricane Beryl came through.
And it didn't really hit, or it did
it
hit?
It did. It went right through our area where the camp was, especially there. I think they may still be without power a week, 8 days later. A friend of mine who lives just north of Houston, they just got power yesterday. So he was 7 days without power.
Wow, and that heat as well.
It's ridiculous. It was in the upper 90s. And so, so the camp got canceled. So spent an extra 8 days, 9 days with my parents, which was fine, but we didn't have power. And then when the power was restored, we didn't have internet or cell coverage, and you just feel cut off. And I was bummed that the camp got canceled, because I do this camp like every single year. So it's kind of like a family reunion type thing. And next year I won't be able to do it, because I'm going to Oxford, actually. I'm going to go to England for the first time next year during the camp week.
Are you doing a conference, or is
it's a group connected to the Lanier Theological Library, which is in Houston.
Yeah.
They have bought a manor called Yarnton.
Dan Steele.
Dan Steele.
Dan Steele.
You know Dan?
Yeah, I know Dan.
Okay, yeah. So they have Yarnton Manor out there, and I'm going to be doing like a preaching conference out there.
Very cool.
At Yarnton Manor, and really stoked about that.
I've just seen that Brian Croft was just there for a
little
while.
Yeah, my buddy Ronnie Martin was just there at the same place. So I couldn't go this year. They actually asked me if I could go this year, and I couldn't because of the camp. But
hey, Dan, if you're listening, because I know he does listen,
okay.
Why is Jared going and I'm not? So,
I'm hoping it's because Becky can go. That's the question mark. I'm not sure if they're going to bring my spouse or not. And so if it means that you have to stay here for Becky to go, then that's fine.
Well, here's my next question. Dan, why does Jared and Becky get to go and Miriam and I don't get to go? You need to message me, Dan.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I'm glad that you can do that. So I spent the last week in Houston because of Beryl, and then finished the week up in California at another speaking engagement. And it's just a weird week. It was hot.
Mm.
It was, you know, I love all the people in Houston. I could never live there. I don't want to talk bad about it because people I love are there, but it's just an awful place. I'm from there. My family's there. My wife's family's there. I wish we could take everyone we love out of there and move them someplace more acceptable, someplace less godforsaken.
Yeah. But, I mean, I did actually message Jared, like, how are you doing? Are you okay? And then I heard nothing back and I was like, oh no.
Did I miss that? Did I ever reply?
Nope. Oh. So as far as I'm concerned, there might be a rift between us.
Maybe it was when we didn't have connection and it didn't come through.
I then saw a post that, I think it was that night that you were like, oh, I've just driven to a gas station to get signal. And I was like, so you have signal.
And I didn't use that and there's still, 10 minutes still no, of connection to talk to you. No, I'm so sorry, Ross.
You know, and I put on the Pastoral Training Center chat to make sure, the guys were all praying for you, but no. So
you only do things for the reciprocity, not just for the goodness of it.
Acts of mercy. I'm glad it wasn't more significant because it was meant to be more significant.
Well, and I make fun of Houston, but be in prayer for them because continually, to this day, they are really struggling with recovery. This was not, it was a category one hurricane. So it's not even the worst you could get, but it has laid the city low. It's exposed, I think. And this, in addition to things that have happened in the last few months and then over winter, especially, they have real issues with their power infrastructure. Yeah. And that's being exposed over and over again. And so that you've got elderly and other folks in the heat without being able to keep food cool, without being able to keep themselves cool. It can be a dangerous thing. So it'd be, I shudder to think if a category three came through, what would have, you know, happened. So anyway, be in prayer for the folks in Houston. It's a grab bag episode.
Grab bag.
Love these. I don't know about you. I'm beginning to struggle with the questions now.
I have five.
Five? So you got to pick two.
I got to pick two.
Okay.
So I'm not struggling whatsoever.
Who went first last time? I don't remember.
Who knows? Shall I go first? Because I actually know.
Go ahead and go first.
I know mine. Okay.
Okay.
What has been the best decade of your life and why?
This has been the best decade of my life. Hmm. As much nostalgia as I have for childhood in certain respects, particularly, we usually have nostalgia. Most people have nostalgia for like the music they listened to and the media they took in and even experiences, playing and those sorts of things. This decade has been the best decade of my marriage. Mm-hmm. It's been the best decade of ministry. Not the most formative, perhaps, but just I think in my 40s, so I turned 49 this November, so I've only got another year left in this decade. But this decade has been sort of being able to play with the notes that I've been given or with the all along. And the Lord's been really kind. Job situation and the season of ministry we're in, season of our marriage that we're in as empty nesters as of about 4 or so years ago. But even as our kids were older and at home, I think we're healthier than we've ever been. Outlook on life is really I get more tired, these days, I get tired more easily these days. Takes longer to feel energized, takes longer to feel physically fit, all those sorts of things. I know that there's more sand in the bottom of the hourglass than in the top. So I can see that coming. Lord willing, I've got another 40, 50 years but midlife, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But in terms of my usefulness, I think, to the church and those and that sort of thing, I think I've put more time in than I have left. And yet I just feel a sense of optimism and sweetness. And I will say, for folks in early years of marriage or early years of ministry or early years of anything where you feel like, oh, am I ever going to get there, do this? And, there's always things that the Lord is working in you, but it does get better.
Yep.
And I think the older you get, and most folks that you and I know who've been married 40, 50 years, you stick it out and there's a sweetness. If you know the Lord, all bets are off if you don't know the Lord, but or if you're not walking with him. But there's a sweetness that happens, and I'd say this decade.
Hmm.
And I'm glad I can say that.
Yeah.
Hopefully next decade I'll say this decade and not last decade.
It's kind of rough if you say it's been downhill for 40 years.
30 years ago, that was it.
That was it.
That was the prime of my life.
Yeah.
That was a really good question. Yeah. What would you say, Ross?
So I've really switched either this or last.
Okay, good.
So the last one was just because in that decade, Miriam and I had pre-kids time. So we were, just me and her. I entered into ministry. All three of our kids were born. But in a similar sense to what you just said, that I feel like every decade that I've lived, it's kind of got better and sweeter. And so even now, my twins are going into double digits. Miriam and I have a wonderful marriage and our ministry is being blessed, and we can see the future ahead in terms of in this decade, likely our eldest will be heading to college. There's just kind of a lot of excitement in this one. And it's kind of, I feel like either last or this is a kind of toss up for both, but not because this one's got any worse. It's just, I feel like there's just so much ahead of me. Mm. So yeah, very similar thing to you that nostalgia is great, but I'm kind of really proud of myself for that question.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my first question.
Okay.
What's the hardest sermon or sermon series? Maybe it was a book you were preaching through, but what's the hardest sermon or sermon series that you have preached? And it can be difficult for a variety of reasons.
For different reasons, yeah. The two that immediately came to my mind was Daniel. I did 23 weeks in Daniel.
Okay.
And that was hard from a theological perspective. The narrative up until kind of late chapter 6, chapter 7 is, I'm not going to say easy, but it kind of flows well to explain, to delve into, to apply. As you get to the latter halves of Daniel, the resources that are out there is a kind of hodgepodge of mess. And so trying to choose between what is right, what is wrong, explain it to my church. A lot of the church at the time had never even read Daniel, never even gone into apocalyptic literature. And now we're doing apocalyptic literature in the Old Testament. It was tough.
Yeah.
Not tough in terms of delivery, not tough in terms of results. Actually, a couple of people became Christians during that series because of that series. Like, it was that pointed them to Christ. Tough because my personal study, it really stretched me.
Okay. Like,
and we're going back to probably 7 years ago now. So we're like still in my early years of ministry. So where you kind of are slightly daunted at the kind of process.
But also daring enough
to take it on. Yeah. So Daniel was theologically tough, but one wonderful time doing it. 1 Timothy was tough because I preached it in a season of life where I felt the church needed to know what good leadership was, but not because of what is biblical and, you know, encourage us to remain faithful, because I was slightly beating the Bible across their head. Like, I was in a season where I would not have been God honoring in my motivation to preach that series. And so therefore, God did not honor me during that process. It was rough to prepare, rough to preach. The results were pretty bad. You know, just the whole series. The word of God remain true and remain beautiful in it. But I felt like there was just no blessing from the Lord in that season. And I'm convinced it was because my motive was, let me beat you across the head with, this is how we should be as a church.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I look back and kind of regret that and wish, I've yet to preach it again, almost out of nervousness of kind of like the last time
would
I preached
it. Would you be rerunning? Yeah.
But I feel like I would want to teach it again from the beauty of what the church could be rather than the how dare we do this differently type thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was 2 rough series for very, very different reasons.
Mm.
I would love to preach Revelation.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, talks about being fearful over Revelation.
I feel like
I would love to do that.
I would preach, I've never preached Revelation. I mean, I've preached passages from it, but not the whole book.
Yeah, not the whole book.
I think I would do that before I would do like Daniel.
Really?
To me, I don't know. I've never done Daniel or... Yeah. That seems really...
I've done a short series in Leviticus and different things. So like there's a lot of places where you would naturally go, oof, that's going to be a bit rough to do that. But what I found is it tends to be either my motivation that's the problem and therefore has caused that kind of pain, if you will, or it's just hard work. It's hard graft to study, to understand all the views, and to know that your sermon isn't meant to present every single view
because
it's not a lecture. So you're sitting there with like, here's 25 pages of notes and you go like, this is not a sermon yet.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I love doing that, but that takes 10, 20, 30 hours a week to be pumping that study out, writing the sermon, and so in that sense, it squeezes your time for pastoral care and things like that. So Daniel, for study reasons, and then 1 Timothy for, I was a bit of an idiot, basically.
Yeah. I was even thinking just in terms of like different kinds of difficulty or different kinds of hardness. So like physically, the hardest sermon I ever had to preach physically was, I think, I preached at Apostles Church in New York, and the morning, actually it was a conference before. The church service was actually fine the next day, but the day before it was really hot. It was October or November, and I was not prepared. I thought New York City would be cooler.
Yeah,
and it was really, really warm. And we were in an old church building that did not have air conditioning. Mm-hmm. And I was sweating so bad that the ink on the pages was running.
Yeah.
And I was so uncomfortable. And you know that sort of thing, like when you start fixating on how uncomfortable you are how badly you're doing,
yes,
you get worse.
Yeah.
And I could not shake it out of my head how badly this is going.
Yeah.
And it just got worse and worse and worse. Yeah. So that's probably like the hardest.
Physically.
Yeah. Emotionally, I remember preaching my friend Richard's funeral, and it just felt like there was a lot at stake because there were a lot of unbelieving family members, and like he and I had talked. I mean, he had cancer, and so the months before we talked about his funeral all the time, and he was really emphasizing, like, I know, you know, he never like said, you better, you know, pull it off.
Yeah.
But I just like, we have talked this over and over again, and he's really hoping that his death serves to impress unbelieving family members to come to Christ. And so I just felt all of this emotional pressure, and that so emotionally that was hard. But then like what you're describing, I preached through Exodus at my church plant and got to the end, like from Exodus 25 to the end, it's like all the tabernacle stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what, even if I know what to do with this once or twice in a row,
how do I do?
I'm doing the same thing over and over again. What the measurements mean, you know, all these sorts of things. That was really difficult. Yeah.
The physical one, I once passed out after preaching, and it was the heat. I just wasn't feeling well. Got through the sermon. I basically pulled myself out to the office. Passed out on the floor in the office. It wasn't a great church situation because the leaders then came in, picked me up off the floor and said a member wanted to talk to me, and they kind of shoved me out and I had to talk to the member. So not the best of situation.
Wow.
Emotional for me, it was the first funeral I did as a pastor, and it was basically the first funeral I'd ever spoken at since my dad had died. And I just remember the weight of my personal emotions and knowing I could not show them. I needed to lead this people in front of me. Like my emotions was not for the individual. It was the last time I was present in this situation, it was my dad.
Yeah.
And just the weight of that, I just remember it. Like I utterly collapsed at home afterwards, and I could not almost control the emotions. Wonderfully, I have a wife that understood that situation. And that was a rough year. I did 20 funerals that year. That's and it was crazy. Almost like in the hardship of people's lives, the Lord brought me through that difficulty and said, like, you're going to have to get used to this if you're going to serve me. So I kind of, through 20 sermons, worked through how to deal with the emotions.
But yeah, that's good.
Still struggle with funerals, but... Is it my question now?
I think it's your question.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to resurrect the Christian movies discussion.
Okay.
This has followed me around in a very negative tone against me.
Oh, I'm sorry, brother.
And I feel like we need to change it to a positive discussion.
Okay.
So, Jared.
Yes.
If you were writing a Christian movie script, tell us about the movie.
I'll tell you about it. Because I think it would be an adaptation of a novel that I've outlined. I had this idea for a novel that, if in the wrong hands, could easily become one of these cheesy Christian movies that we see so
but
much.
But if it was in the right
hands. If it was in the right hands.
If you could pick your stellar cast.
Okay, so here's the basic storyline.
Okay.
It's about a pastor who has an affair. His wife wants to divorce him. He, of course, loses his church. He's at a attractional mega church, big production type thing. He feels cast out, whatever, scarlet letter, et cetera. He runs away. Let's say he's in the suburban South somewhere. He runs away to a small town in New England and basically takes his severance, gets a day job, I don't know, working someplace as a tradesman or something, and lives in this apartment complex. And just tries to live a quiet life, suffering under all that he's lost, but ends up, because he's still a believer, even though a broken one, having this daily ministry to the folks in the apartment complex around him. So the single mom, the crackhead, you know, all these different people. And I kind of have in mind a setting where I used to minister as well, and kind of the kinds of folks that revolved around there. And kinds of finds a way back to redemption a little bit, starts going back to church himself, to a little country church where there's another pastor who's younger than him, not as savvy, not as sophisticated, not as world weary, hasn't been around as long, but somehow is able to kind of speak some truth into his life. And in the end, he discovers that he can have a ministry just by being faithful to Jesus in his everyday life amidst broken people. And perhaps because he himself is a broken person, he's able to minister from his wounds. So that's the story for the novel.
Yeah, I could see how in the wrong hands, that would be a very bad movie.
Yes. they would cast Michael W. Smith and they would kind of downplay some things. They would make everything really happy and smiley. Yeah. His marriage would get back together, all those sorts of things.
Feels when you were describing it a little bit like the life of Otto, how he's like had a bit of a disaster in his life and then there's this family and... And slowly but surely, the
people around him begin to
change him. Yeah, so it got a little bit of that feel to it.
Yeah,
so.
It would be, I guess sort of a parallel type story to that, but more consciously redemptive and what have you. So, yeah, I think if you were to make it a good movie, you probably would not have to use any of the Christian folks that are out there making Christian movies. So you'd have to take somebody who could... be okay with Christian sensibilities, like a Scorsese or a Paul Schrader or somebody who has an ear for that world, and could bring some good sensibility to it artistically.
Would it be like kind of more artsy type movie rather than dramatic?
Yeah, it would probably feel like an indie film kind of thing. I would expect, not too long ago, did you ever see the Apostle?
Yes.
But with Robert Duvall?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So really rough around the edges. I wouldn't say it's a Christian movie.
No.
But has elements like it in there.
Well, and when you were describing like—
something like that kind of. So even like a Duvall type who would have an affection. So this is the thing. I think even in there are people who do Christian characters in secular movies and things. And you can tell they hate Christianity or they hate Christians. And then other times where they don't understand Christianity, they're not Christians, but they at least have some kind of affection for them. This is like my read on The Simpsons, which has the character Ned Flanders, who is he's the Christian neighbor of Homer Simpson and is very much a devout Christian and cornily so. I mean, he is the character of the cheesy Christian.
Yep.
His kids play Billy Graham video games and I mean, haddly doodly, he's just such a nerd. And the show is very obvious that he's a nerd and he's corny. But the show is also very obvious that he's not a hypocrite.
Yeah.
He's not a mean person.
Yeah.
He is a kind person and he really likes Homer, even though Homer hates him. Yeah. And so there's an affection for the corny Christian in that show. Now, the Reverend in The Simpsons, they do cast as a hypocrite and a loser. Yeah. But the Christian neighbor... there's a lens of affection they see him through. And I appreciate that,
It's interesting you raised The Apostle. That was one of my dad's favorite movies.
Oh, okay.
Because he felt that there was a lot of similarities in his life. Mm. But even just that his past sin catches up with him.
Yeah.
And for my dad, it was like my past sin of alcoholism and all those things did catch up with him. And it's you never really leave the earthly consequence for your sins, but you always have that eternal hope. So I remember watching The Apostle in our household. I remember the soundtrack.
We had the soundtrack as well. Yeah, I think it's PG-13. Mm-hmm. So not necessarily recommending it to everybody, but it's one of those that
sort of redemptive story.
Yeah, it's got a redemptive story and has these sort of biblical elements and things to it. And it's Robert Duvall. Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton is in it as well.
It's really funny, the worship sections as well. Okay, your
final question
for me.
It's a light one. If you have any, this came up with a group of friends while I was in Houston, and I thought it was really interesting. It tells us about something about each other. If you could have any superpower, what would it be? You got one superpower. What would it be and why?
I would like to be invisible for two reasons.
Okay.
Did you maybe know what you expected?
I'm waiting.
Okay. Two reasons. Number one, I'm a full-on type guy. I run 100 miles an hour. I'm kind of friends with everybody. I kind of connect with everybody. I'm always talking. I'm always busy. But there's times in life where that becomes too much for me. It's rare, but when it does happen, I really just don't want to be seen. I don't want to connect with people. I need a break from running that 100 miles an hour kind of crazy life. And to some extent, sometimes I just want to click that button that goes, I'm not here.
And, but you are.
But I am. But no one else knows.
Oh, I see.
So just yeah. the ability to switch it off, you know, and even just in terms of as a pastor, also advising here on campus, there's sometimes where you just kind of feel like you're all talked out. You're all advised out. Like, I don't have anything to give, but people know I'm still here. So if you were just like able to hit that invisible button. The second reason is, I love caring for people. I love gifting things to people. I love serving people. What I find really awkward is when they know it's me. Mm. So like if I want to gift someone, you know, finances, books, meals, whatever, I find the exchange really awkward.
Okay.
And I've done it through other people. I was like, hey, could you gift this to somebody and don't tell them, whatever. I would love to be able to just like invisibly, like an invisibility cloak, just kind of walk up, put the gift there, walk away. They have no idea where it's come from, do you know?
Okay. Did you see a box floating towards them? What is this? No, levitating gift.
But it's my superpower. I can make whatever I want invisible. Oh, so, you know, okay, it extends to what I decide.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, okay. I'm kind of an arrogant superpower. But yeah, I think the ability to switch off from the world,
okay,
but also the ability to serve the world without the awkwardness of needing to be thanked or somebody feeling they need to recognize me. I want to do these things, but I don't want to be involved in them from the person's sight.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm explaining that
well. Sure. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay.
There was a few folks in my group of friends, somebody said being able to read people's minds.
Oh, I don't know if I want that.
And I turned that off, or like I said no. But for the same reason, I don't think I would want invisibility. The temptation would be too great to listen in on thoughts or conversations that I wouldn't want to know about or be in my head. And if I could read people's minds, I feel like it would always be like, I don't think I could handle the responsibility of knowing what was in other people's minds.
And also you find out no one likes you.
Well, that's true. You know? I know. I mean, or maybe you just told me.
Yeah.
But I think invincibility. So I said super strength.
Okay.
If I just had super strength, I don't want to fly because I don't like heights anyway. If I had the gift of flying, I would always just be flying about 6 feet off the ground everywhere I went. So I don't want that. I don't want minds or invisibility because I think I would be tempted to carry too much weight around. But I think super strength, I could just, because that way you can always open any jar. If somebody needs a car lifted off of them, you could do it. Like, you're just of use. You're just of use no matter what.
Have you had many situations in life where you felt, if only I had super strength?
No, but I would seek them out. Because if you get a super, then you become a superhero.
You'd seek out.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, I could use this for the common good. It would be, you know, I could use it for evil too, I suppose. But yeah, it would be less of a burden, I think. But that's where I would go.
It's also a strange question.
It is, but it's a fun question.
Sure.
We got to learn it. You want to be invisible.
Yep.
So you can hear what people say about you. If you enjoy the podcast, dear listener.
That's not what I said.
I know. They heard what you said. Give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.